I'm sorry for the late start. Two of our important speakers are still on their way, but since it's getting kind of late, I thought we should start. Oh, I'm seeing people, familiar faces in the. So I think we'll have a personal sort of GTI announcement from our executive director, and so I guess we'll start with that. Yeah.
Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you, Melissa. My name is Russell Schell. I'm the executive director here at the Global Taiwan Institute. On behalf of GTI's board of directors, I would like to read the following statement. The Global Taiwan Institute mourns the loss of Dr. Robert Yi Xiong Lai, who served as senior counselor and chairman of the board of directors since September 2016. Robert's passion for Taiwan and strengthening its relationship with his adopted home, the United States, have been an inspiration for countless people across multiple generations in Taiwan and the United States. His unwavering commitment to do what was best for Taiwan and the United States and the selfless energy that he invested towards that lifelong cause were instrumental in helping to establish the Global Taiwan Institute. GTI would not stand as firmly as it does today had it not been for his support. Dr. Lai's faith in Taiwan's future was and continues to be the guiding light of GTI's mission. As Robert would say, quote, "I've always believed that the future for Taiwan and the United States could be bright as long as Taiwan shared America's values. That is why I always supported the promotion of American values in Taiwan," end quote. His conviction in entrusting future generations with the responsibilities of deepening U.S.-Taiwan relations is the key to a better future for relations between Taiwan and the United States. It is with profound sadness that the GTI family bids farewell to Chairman Lai, and we offer our most sincere condolences to his loving wife and family. GTI will honor Dr. Lai's legacy by ensuring that his passion for Taiwan and the United States will continue to inspire generations to come. Thank you.
Thank you, Russell. So we wanted to just make that personal announcement. Before I start with introductions, I do have another sort of administrative announcement, which is that we will later be joined by a speaker from the Department of Health and Human Services who cannot be on the record, unfortunately, today. For that reason, please, when she does arrive, don't take her photograph and don't attribute her, quote, anything she says today to herself. And so we really appreciate the cooperation from the press and our attendees today to work with us on that. And to people who will be listening to this event later on a recording, we apologize that we couldn't include that in the recording. So I'm just going to get started, and hopefully our speakers will arrive soon. This event, Taiwan and Global Health, is part of our Civil Society and Democracy series, which is funded by the Taiwan Foundation for Democracy. And if you don't know, it is a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization that is the first National Democracy Assistance Foundation ever in Asia. And this year's theme for these programs is Taiwan's Global Impact. So we're looking at a series of issues where Taiwan is a leader, where Taiwan is making progress, and it has a global component to it. So we will have six total, and this is the second one for this year. And most of you probably already know the World Health Assembly is coming up, and for the second year or third year in a row, it will be barred from observing the WHA. And so this event is especially timely because of that. And even though observer status doesn't require statehood, Taiwan's private citizens and NGOs are not able to attend either. And I think we all know whose interest it is in that Taiwan doesn't attend this event in any capacity. But the truth is that diseases do not know any borders, and it hurts the general public around the world when not everyone can be invited to attend these kinds of international cooperation events. And so this panel, though, is an attempt to go beyond the usual rhetoric when it comes to Taiwan and the WHA, which is simply that it's not fair. It is not fair. But why should it matter to the world that Taiwan's not invited? And so for that reason, we try to ask the question and answer the question with this panel of what is Taiwan already contributing to global health? And so we invited some technical experts today to try to answer that question. It is a very broad and diverse policy field, of course, so we could only cover a fraction of it. But hopefully this will further the discourse with more actual information about Taiwan and its involvement with global health. And we have our speaker from...
So
Health and Human Services arriving. Did you want to speak first?
No.
Okay.
Absolutely not.
So, okay. So again, if you take any photographs, please, unfortunately, crop Erica out. I will give her her name tag, though. So thank you for joining us, Erica. I'm just about to introduce everyone. Unfortunately, Dr. Xu is still not to be seen. So I will introduce him first, even though he's not here. He's the director of the International Medical Center since 2015 at the National Chung-Gung University in Tainan, Taiwan. And since 2011, he has also served as the director of the South Branch of National Disaster Medical Assistance Team at the Ministry of Health and Welfare. He's the vice director of the Emergency Medical Operations Center and has had many other roles in Taiwan's medical community, in addition to working as an instructor and a physician. And hopefully his presence will join us soon. Shouqu Judy Wong is an international pharmaceutical systems and health specialist. Ms. Wong was a hospital pharmacist in Taiwan for 9 years and then started her international development career by working for two Taiwan medical missions in Guinea-Bissau and Malawi for 9 years as well, and then worked for international non-government organizations for 12 years. Since she has substantial experience in improving pharmaceutical supply and use and strengthening pharmaceutical systems. Erica, to my right here, has been the director for Asia and the Pacific Office of Global Affairs, OGA, in the Department of Health and Human Services since 2011. And previously, from 1998 to 2007, she worked on bilateral health cooperation with Russia and the Ukraine, and then with Asia and the Pacific. In between stints at OGA, she developed federal, state, and local government partnerships for the Defense Centers of Excellence for Psychological Health and Traumatic Brain Injury, and coordinated research on women's health at the National Institutes of Health. And lastly, we have Director Liu, Daniel Liu. He has served as the Director of the Health Division at the Taipei Economic and Cultural Representative Office to the United States since July 2015. Previously, he was the Director General of the Public Health Bureau in Taidong County. He has had various roles in the medical field, from academic lecturer to Chief of Pingdong City Health Center. He has served Taiwan in Africa as the medical director to the mission in Mozambique and as the representative to Africa in the Department of Health in Malawi and Swaziland. So these four very impressive individuals will talk to us today on this issue of Taiwan and global health. And I think, would you like to start, Judy? I'll pull up your presentation. And so we'll just jump right into these presentations. If you'll excuse me, I'll bring it up. Okay, and Judy, please. Thank you.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Shouqu. You can call me Judy, if that's easier for you. And I think for the interest of time, I won't spend too much time to repeat who I am and where I worked. I wish to focus on the pharmaceutical supply and services that I worked for in the Guinea-Bissau and Malawi. So I think I wish to focus on these countries. Just to give you a short outline that what I'm going to talk about. I'd like to take you to Africa and to look at Taiwanese medical mission. And then I would like to take you focus in the Guinea-Bissau and Malawi. And then I would like to introduce how in the medical mission we what are the strategies to we improve the pharmaceutical supply and services. And then, of course, I'd like to also share with you the results. Yeah. And then we'd like to also introduce our result contributes to WHO agenda. What we did before we left. All right, so welcome to Africa. I really love these lovely smiles. And okay, yes, okay. Okay, this is just a flash introduction about, go ahead. Yes. This is just a flash about the medical mission in Africa. So the first medical mission was started in 1962, and all this medical mission I think Taiwanese medical mission is a bit different from other type of medical support. All other type of support, most of them, they focus on primary healthcare. If you understand the healthcare in the developing countries, however, the tertiary healthcare is where it suffer. So when patient was referred from the primary healthcare to the so-called referral hospitals or the health centers, there they have problem in terms of medicine and the doctors and equipment. If you could remember how the president, the previous president, died in their own capital, the central hospital, it was because there was no medicine, there was like shortage of here, shortage of there. So I think that is really a example of how the people suffer in the central hospital, the referral hospitals, where the specialist, the specialized medical service is provided. So just to give you a heads up that Taiwanese medical mission is majority of this are providing, they provide the specialized medical services. And these medical missions are based in the hospital, mostly like based in the hospital. And then from there, we reach out. Like for example, in Guinea-Bissau and in Malawi, I use Malawi as an example. We based in the Muzu Central Hospital. And there, because we cover the northern region, provide the healthcare to the northern region. So we have to reach out to other district hospitals and health centers. And so that is how we operate. And I'd love to also give you this example. Okay, now you, from the map, you can see we had all these medical missions. The first one started in Libya. It's 1962. So for this ABCD, this court, it's the series of the sequence of the time. So the A is Libya, so it started. But I won't be able to give you all these details. It's and then the now, the present, we have the past and the present. So present, we currently we have only two, one in Burkina Faso and one in Swaziland. So just give you a flash about the mission, Taiwan Medical Mission in Africa. So then I'd like to take you to Guinea-Bissau and Malawi, where I used to work for. I wish to highlight that it is not because I'm a pharmacist, so I highlight the pharmaceutical supply. It was because, you know, this area, you may heard many other stories about medical or health services, but really heard about it, anything about pharmaceutical supply or services. So I'm really glad to have this chance to share with you. So now we are in Guinea-Bissau and Malawi. So in Guinea-Bissau, the mission started in 1990 and then closed in 1998. And it was based in a rural hospital, Kanjango Hospital. It's like provincial level, but it's only like 105 beds. It's pretty small, and I was there for 4.5 years, from 1994 to 1998, and then in there was another mission in Mzuzu in Malawi, and then we based in Mzuzu Central Hospital. This is the referral hospital in the northern region of Malawi. There are only four central hospitals in Malawi. And they have two in the south, one in the central, and then there was no one in the north until the Malawi asked Taiwan to help to build a central hospital in the northern region. And then they also asked for a technical assistance by sending a group of the specialists. So that's how we have this hospital. And so I was there in 2001 to 2005. I because, you know, in 1994, there was no digital camera, so I lost all the pictures. It was all in paper, but it was not with me here, so I won't be able to show you. But I can show you some pictures from Malawi. All right. Now, I would like to now take you straight to the technical area, how we improve pharmaceutical supply in these two hospitals and also benefit the whole region that we supported. When I started, these are the questions I asked myself. What should I supply? What should we supply? So that is the selection of medicines, because our budget is, of course, limited, and we have to use it wisely. So the first thing is to understand the disease patterns. It was my first time to Africa, to Guinea-Bissau, to see lots of people suffering from malaria. And of course, that is a major thing. And then we also have the threat of cholera outbreak and other type of diseases. And then we also have to think about the specialist needs. We have this specialist, and then they come. You know, the specialists, they have their training back some in Taiwan, and then in Malawi we also have other specialists from Egypt, from UK. So they all under different trainings. So they use all medicines different. So I have to understand them, and I communicate with each and everyone to understand, and then we also bring them together and to help them understand how we can prioritize, because budget-wise, we won't be able to support everyone, but we can support majority of the disease, the demand of the disease issues. And then the second is, how many then? Okay, now I know what medicine I have to buy. So how many to buy? You know, we need some epidemiology data, but the doctors, I don't know how many patients I will see. And the HMR, the Health Management Information System, is also very weak. They cannot retrieve any data from their so-called their health management information system, because everything is in writing. And, you know, when they write, they give you the whole book, and no one is going to really able to retrieve the data. Even they retrieved, it's not a good quality. So I have to try my best to use the limited, okay, I know I have this budget, and then I would like buy a little bit as a start. And then I do to look at the inventory, the moving of the medicine, and I started to understand, especially for those specialized medicines. For the essential medicines, it's much easier. Like, for example, malaria. That time it was chloroquine and quinine. And for other specialized medicines, I have to make sure that I have budget to deal with those emergencies. Yeah. So so I have to do the estimates, and then I have to make sure that my inventory records, my inventory management is good, so that I can use the money wisely. And then I also have to learn how to minimize supply interruption. While I was in Guinea-Bissau, this country, I have to say, is one of visitors he visited, and then he went back and he wrote published in the newspaper. That country was, he described that it was a country that forgotten by God. That means it's really poor. Really, I really sympathize. So when I was there, I really see the needs of medicines. But then supply the medicines, supply those pharmaceuticals, you know, it's very hard to get medicines from outside. Even though I have to buy, in the very beginning in Guinea-Bissau, majority of the medicines were shipped direct from Taiwan. So, and we experienced some shipment delays. And then I had to find a way to buy medicines locally. And unfortunately, locally is also very difficult. And we could buy from UNICEF. And UNICEF, they also had to buy from Europe. So all this supply chain, it caused lots of challenges. And so then I started to reach out to know the other suppliers. So I we found suppliers from Portugal. Because Guinea-Bissau, it was a Portuguese colonized country. So their connection with Portugal is easier, and Portugal is pretty close to Africa in terms of the supply. And then I also had a chance to reach out to a non-profit supplier called IDA Foundation. And IDA Foundation is based in Netherlands. And they supply the medicines basically to those national hospitals or the medical missions like us, now for non-profit, for humanitarian aid in the developing countries. So IDA Foundation. So I tried to reach out to all these different type of suppliers. Then we were able to not only minimize the gap for interruption, and the supply interruption, I was able to even bring down the cost. So in Malawi was easier because there are more suppliers in the country, but the medicines were imported. But it makes it much easier. But in Malawi, there was a challenge to me because the difference between Guinea-Bissau is Guinea-Bissau, the medical mission supply everything 100%. So 100% would mean that that hospital, even the area, that the government would not need to supply medicines to the hospital. It's the medical mission that supply everything 100%. But in Malawi, the Mzuzu Central Hospital, it is part of the government supply system. And so now the use of money is another thing. I have to look at when there's a short supply from the government, and then that is where we have to fill the gap. So it now makes me very hard to plan. Planning-wise, in Malawi, it's not as easy as in Guinea-Bissau. But in Guinea-Bissau, it's easier to plan, but it's not easy to access, to buy, in terms of procurement. So there's this difference between these two countries. So what I did was I widened the list of suppliers so that I would have a variety of suppliers that whenever I need, I know where to go to get it. And then I also improve inventory warehouse management so that I can reduce the waste and I can and maximize the value of the medicines. And here I also like to talk about warehouse management. In Guinea-Bissau, we have a very huge challenge, is that there are so many termites. Termites, my goodness, termites are like mountain, you know. I don't know whether you have seen those mountain, the hills. Those hills, like even, taller than the person, than the people. And then so those termites, and they can just pop up like from the ground, and then they can eat up your containers of the medicines, and so if you have anything sweet, they even like just penetrate to. So that is the biggest challenge that I had in Guinea-Bissau. So I have to make sure that I prevent the medicine, that the heart earned it medicines to be eaten by those termites. So I really took a lot of time, make sure and I have to do the preventive approach and make sure that it's clean all the time. It's not only like we manage the temperature, and not only that, manage the shelf life. That is something else that you may not imagine. Yeah. And then, okay, now is how I can use the limited resource wisely. It's efficiency. So, now it's about procurement. I make sure that I have a competitive quote, and as I said, inventory and warehouse management should be done well. Since I arrived, I saw some medicines have expired. So I learned a lesson that if you are not really watching it, managing it very well, it's, you know, you, the medicines you spend money send all the way from outside, you know, and then you are here and then it's just die there. So after I started managing the inventory and warehouse management, I had not any chance to make to leave the medicine expire in the drugstore. Yeah, and then I also have to make sure rational distribution. When I say rational distribution means we supply the medicines to the wards, to even sometimes health centers, and but they request medicines without any plan. They just say, okay, today I liked paracetamol. For example, it's acetaminophen here. Or I order 100 tablets, 1,000 tablets every day without really like, do they really need that much? So they accumulate medicines in their wards and then get expired there. So that is another management I have to handle, like rational distribution. I design the system and then distribute the medicines with a better reasons, a better strategies. And I also send our staff, pharmacy staff, because we work with the local pharmacy staff. That was, I was there, not only me, you know, the mission, I was the only pharmacist, but we work in the hospital and we have a local colleagues. So I train them to do, to the ward, to do inspection. I did once first and I take them and then go around and then they started to know how to inspect medicines, check the expiry date, check the excess stock, and they take them back so that I can use this resource, yeah, wisely. Yeah, and then the other thing is, I also noticed that the medicines, the prescriptions, and some of the medicines are not used rationally. For example, this include like if there's a health condition that is not, in fact, it's not a kind of infection, and then you found that they prescribe antibiotics, and some of the fever without any like diagnosis, confirmed diagnosis, they will start to prescribe anti-malaria medicines. So on this type of issues and other issues anyway, so there are, I found this issue. So I know this is everywhere in the world. And I developed the pharmaceutical, the medicine service, medicine information services to help them understand and how we can improve the use of medicines. And also activate a drug therapeutic committee. Yeah, and I'll show you something else later. And of course, there's one thing that we always do is capacity building. And this capacity building is not only just come and teach. It's you need to, we did advocation. We have to do advocate. For example, rational use of medicines and to avoid the antimicrobial antibiotic resistance. And we also have to demonstrate how to do this. If we just say, yeah, don't do this, don't do that, do that, do that. Sometimes they say, how? But how? So I did demonstrate. So for example, in the country, in Malawi, they have never done any plan in terms of how to decide the demand of the medicine, how to quantify, how to forecast the medicine for procurement. So I demonstrated in the Mizu Central Hospital. And then I presented it to the Minister of Health. And then they were surprised. They said, the principal secretary told me, why people say this is not possible? So I did it. I even have a budget down there. So he asked me to share with, to help the central hospitals. And then he saw the result. And he said, okay, that's scaled up to the district hospital. Can you help? And that time, USID has another project there to support the district hospitals. So I told them that this should be integrated in that program. It's a supply chain program. So they have catalyzed that national quantification since then. Yeah, and so we, of course, when I have any chance, I will do in-service training and mentoring, not only for our own staff, and also for other hospitals. Yeah, so that was about the supply, the time. Okay, So improved medicine, the use of medicine. Okay, here I can make it shorter because I have to talk about a little bit already. In terms of Guinea-Bissau, we purchased Portuguese textbooks, and then from there we started to do the training because, you know, I was not trained, I did not learn Portuguese, but I used local language. So we did have the oral communication, but in terms of training, we need the describable book. Yeah, and in Malawi, I have talked about that I developed a drug information services, and we also developed a top hospital formula. I still have one copy for myself. Yeah, and it was the first hospital formulary. This is a book that provide how to use the medicine, all the information on how to use the medicines. Yeah, also activated the medicines and therapeutic committee where we have the chance to gather all the doctors to review the use of medicine and discuss. So I'd like to talk about the collect result. This is what we need to really tell. And I think the result is about that these two hospitals became the richer hospitals regarding the pharmaceutical supply in terms of this is now Guinea-Bissau. And I also like to talk about the third point about Kanjongo Hospital in Guinea-Bissau. It became the go-to hospital for what? The president's family, the president of the Guinea-Bissau, and even the U.S. embassy, U.S. ambassador and all the U.S. embassy their staff. It became the option of the hospital. So they have to go all the way from capital and to all this rural hospital. Yeah, and then even the people across the border, they also came. Yeah, and then of course we improved the pharmacy technician's competency. And then in Malawi, it's the same, the richest hospital. And I also have improved the awareness of medicine safety. And the central, as I told you, we managed to catalyze the central hospital, the national hospitals for the planning for procurement, and improve the capacity. So okay. Now this slide is going to tell you what we did that contributed to WHO agenda. So we contributed to availability, accessibility, and affordability of the good quality essential medicines. And the medicines we bought all come from the qualified, the registered suppliers. And we also improved the rational use of medicines and safety and antimicrobial resistance. So I think this is the major thing. But in terms of capacity building, I'd like to quickly tell you that these were some of the people that my colleagues in Malawi. And I'd like to tell you, in this we have this regular training, mentoring, regular training. I also did one by one mentoring, but this is just our regular technical meeting. And this person, he was inspired by our medical mission, and he was so motivated. And then he got a scholarship in Taipei, in the Taipei Medical University, and then he studied MBA, Health Administrative, administration, and now he's working for USID in Malawi. And then this young man, he also got a scholarship and studied a master and a PhD clinical pharmacy and graduated from Taipei Medical University. And now he's back to Malawi and teaching in the College of Medicine. Yeah. And this is a institutional capacity building. It was a individual, but then this is the institutional. This is what I told you, that we help the country to help the central hospitals. These are the central hospitals' chief pharmacists, that we help them to do the forecasting of the pharmaceuticals for the, it's the annual forecasting. And then this is me, that I was able to present our result in the National Ministry of Health budgeting meeting. And then from there, they realized that this is doable, and then they started to scale up into the district hospitals. Yes, because of time, we just have to go quickly finish taking you to see beautiful Malawi. Yeah, and thank you.
Thank you very much, Judy, for that. And sorry to have rushed you a little bit at the end there. I'm going to add the Dr. Xu's presentation, and excuse me for this technical moment.
Okay, I'm Dr. Xu from Taiwan. I'm from the Taiwan Chengkeng University Hospital. I serve many, maybe our people and our families. So I have some Chinese, so maybe you can understand. Okay. So I will talk about Taiwan, the NDMAT in international disasters. I'm Dr. Xu. Actually, I'm a trauma surgeon. I work at the ER, and I also respond for the South Branch of the IMOC, for the MOH. And I'm also a director of the International Medical Center in my hospital. So it's my email. I think we can have some connection, because my English is not good. So you can email to me, and easy for me, I understand your questions. And today, since the Global Taiwan Institute gave me this chance to have the share you my experience. It's a short story, but spent me 10 years. This is my book. I think you cannot buy this book here. This book is encourage our young generation to do the right thing in the global health, because before, Taiwanese always think the global health is a charity. Everyone did the global health is a very good job, but in truth, it's not. Sometimes we will give some the local people hurt. And my specialist is trauma. And just a few days, I opened the patient's thorax because he had a gunshot. But I still enjoy the job for the global health, because I think it's very worth, and we can help more people compare working in the ER. And I participated in many disasters in recent years, 2008 to the 2016 Taiwan. And besides Taiwan disaster training, I also had the training course in ICRC, IFRC, Red Cross system, and the MSF system. So I know lots of the friends, then they can help Taiwan to develop our international medical teams. And this is a Taiwan National Disaster Medical Assistance Team. We call the NDMAT. And this team set up after the 1999, the GG earthquake. The Taiwanese can remember this is big earthquake, lots of damage, lots of people deaths. And we have this team we can send to the field. We can self-sufficient for the free 3 days. And we can triage the patient, provide high quality medical care. And until now, we developed the almost 20 years. Before, we have the scheduled exercise with the defense, Ministry of the Defense. We have two branch, one in Taiwan University Hospital, and we cooperate. But now the Taiwan University Hospital, North Branch, they transfer to the training base. But we are still prepared for the international disaster. And we have a lot of the exercise every year. But when I take responsibility, I change it, because only the scheduled disaster exercise, we cannot find the problem. Even after the 2013 non-warming exercise, we find that lots of the hospitals don't have the standard of procedure. When the disaster occurs, your hospital, you don't know how to do. So after this exercise, we know the problem. So every year we improve it. And in 2015, we set up the protocol and demand how to support the hospital in the field. Because before, we sent the the disaster medical team to the field and set the mobile hospital, but not support hospital. But the medical staff work in the hospital is more efficiency. And in 2016, because I represent for the national disaster medical team, but we have local DMAT in Taiwan. So this is the first time we call all the DMATs, so including the 15 hospital and almost 170 medical staff to join together to find how to cooperate. But I find it still difficult. Maybe it's the nature of the person. It's difficult to cooperate with the others. And people like to do when you usually do. So, and then, because after a heady experience, I find we need to develop a lightened and a well-equipped the medical team, like the emergency room, because I work in the emergency room. So when in the field, we can offer a patient's airway, breathing, circulation. This is very important for the first aid. And we also developed high technology. This is unmanned air vehicles. And we use this to monitor, to evaluate the field, the safety. And then we can send the medical team there. And we also have the IP camp. It's a real-time image transmitted to the commander center by internet. And we had the real experience in Tainan earthquake, unfortunately, in 2016. And then every exercise we use it. Then we combine the IP camp and the UAV. We can use the UAV to carry the IP camp to the field. We don't need the medical staff to the very dangerous field. And then we can monitor the real situation of the field. Okay, in 2008, everyone maybe know, in the Myanmar, they have a very big tropic cyclone Nagis. And lots of the people die and many damage. In Taiwan, we sent two times of the mission for a mission. Because of the military government at that time, the Myanmar government very closed. Even me, I was arrested at that time because they don't allow the foreigners to do a lot in there. And the first time we cannot to the very severe area because of the government. And the second time, after discussion, we can go to the very severe area. For example, every day we took the boat to the isolated village. And many village the village people cannot approach the outside. So we offer the medical service on the boats and do the minor surgery. And in this village, totally almost 1,000, but more than one half died and in the cyclones. And finally, we transfer the drugs and the data to a local NGO, because at that time we don't have international window for the data connection. And every time we have the medical record and we have the report of the disaster. And in 2010, the Haiti earthquake very big and very many international team there. At the first time we send the rescue team. And then we send three the medical team there. And again, we have the medical records and we have the disaster report. But we have the other mission. And we joined the OCHA activities every day. We went to the health cluster meeting and we share experience and we know what the new situation in the field and where need help, we can send some people there. And because I'm a trauma surgeon, so I work at the nine. So I cooperate with the NGO, it's International Medical Corps, it's from United States. And this hospital, the security is responded by the US Army. And we work there, but I find at night we cannot do any operation. Even the very severe trauma patients, we can let it pass away. We cannot do anything. And we don't have ventilator, so we cannot give the very critical care patients for patients. So this is why I developed very lightened and well equipment and qualified the service for the field. And in 2016, and I attend the WHO, the EMT, because since 2010, after the Haiti earthquake, the WHO find a very severe problem. because in the field, no coordination, no rule for the disaster. So they developed foreign medical team since 2010, then changed to the emergency medical teams. In Hong Kong in 2016, I attend this professional meeting, but unfortunately, the next year I cannot attend without any reason. Plus, EMT. EMT means emergency medical team. Like the common language of the ACRS, ATRS, everyone knows CAB, CAB when you do the BRS. So now in the field, everyone knows EMT because you are qualified. All the medical team member know what to do in the field, what cannot do, and we should follow what kind of the rules. And until now, there are seven teams are qualified by WHO. So we have type 1, type 2, type 3. And the type 1, like the outpatient department and the emergency room. And type 2, they can offer some major operation. And type 3 can offer the critical care, like ICU. And when I come back after attending this meeting, I persuade my central government to develop to the EMT. So we met the handbook for the SOP, for the WHO EMT. This is first time for a handbook for the medical teams. So the next year, our exercise changed to step-by-step of SOP by the EMT rules and then by the support from the Japanese disaster relief team. And fortunately, because we have the equipment, but they are old, and the Japanese Red Cross donates equipment, two sets of type 1 EMT to my hospital. Then we have very new, very modern, and we can offer the patient the first ABC, and they can survive. Not only give them the pills, if you give them the trauma patient pills, they cannot survive. Okay, the WHO said, governments will only let certified medical teams into the countries, but they have many restrictions. Just like for Taiwan, we are not allowed even to attend the international professional meeting. Okay, besides the medical team, if we don't send the medical team, we still can help the other countries. For example, the next week I will go to Kenya because we have the hemodialysis program there. This is since 2006. By the help of the Dr. Liu. And in 2006, Kenya have the Rift Valley fever, and the Taiwan IHR sent the expert there and donate some mosquito nets and it of some effect. And the next year, we cooperate with the Guru Lake University of the Kisumu, and we have the disaster prevention response plan, and we have a training course. And in 2008, they had election violence, so many IDPs. And we cooperated with Grook, set up the IDP house, and they can offer the IDP a very shelter. And until 2 years ago, and we had the international conference there, we invited 10 countries in the East Africa and to talk about the disaster prevention and the critical disease. Okay, this is this year our activities. In June, we have a commander course, and we have the field exercise, rescue medical team transferred by helicopters, and they combined the real exercise. And we also invite MSF, USAID, JDR, Japanese DMAT, Hong Kong Disaster Preparedness and the Response Institute to share each the experience and the response to the international experience disaster. Then we can join together how to face the new the more and more common the disasters. Okay, I think disaster is like we still to follow the SDG of the UN. Everyone like the partnership, and then in disaster we have the rule, and we will improve the disaster medical service and to improve the good health and the well-being of the peoples. And this is my report. Thank you.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, Erica, Dr. Xu, and Judy. And thanks to GTI for inviting me over. As much as I love to, as a clinician and health worker, I have official capacity today also from TechGrow. So I'll summarize a little bit the issues that have been addressed today, which is very significant, especially in May. You know, in May we have the WHA issue coming up. But let us go back in time a little bit. Taiwan used to be quite devastated after the war. We were down to the middle and below at the international development and social economic status during the time right after that. And we so much so that we receive tremendous international aid during those times. And according to the sources from my boss back home, we even received up to $100 million per year in 1950s to supplement our national budget. And that amount equivalent to 20% of national budget at the time. So it was quite a dramatic turnaround over these years. And especially from my expertise, for public health, we received tremendous help from international partners, especially the eradication of important infectious diseases like polio, malaria, and smallpox. You know, smallpox is one of the big issues from Dr. Henderson at the time. And I think he visited Taiwan a couple of times with other teams from US CDC at the time and also from US government agencies at the time to supply technical expertise and consultation so that we can develop our own system. And of course, as a pediatrician myself, I love to mention issues related directly to me, which is family planning. A lot of people already forgotten the time when family planning started in early 1920s, and then started in full big steam in 1950s and 60s, and we had a huge sponsorship from U.S. NGOs, namely the Pathfinder Fund from Dr. Clarence Gamble of Procter & Gamble. You know, Procter & Gamble company is a big one. And they sponsored of the cost of public health nurses in Taiwan for them to go to rural area and teach our population what is contraception about. And some of the pictures may remind you dearly, if you still remember, how we carry our family on a motorcycle. No?
And with helmet.
Okay. And of course, I also put up the commemorative stamps we had at the time. And we know that such impact to a social development is tremendous. Not only the economics and the technology and education, health is one of the most important factors in the social economic development. And one of the studies relates to Taiwan's development was to say that health development lagged behind the income level increase by 2 to 5 years, depending on the region. But I beg to differ in certain degree, because like in Africa, without healthy people, how can you educate them? How can you train them to become a productive society member? You know, it's a oxymoron, an ambiguous situation where you want to invest in the society, and which one you want to start first? Both? You don't have that much money, and you need to prioritize the investment here and there. But seeing the challenge here is that so much resources are needed every time we think about development. So you need partners, not just one. And then we are fortunate to overcome those challenges throughout the decades, and then we become contributors. Sorry for the typo, should be LIBYA for the first Libya name. We started medical cooperation to Libya 1964 and 68, and then by and to Saudi Arabia 1970-1991. Those were done mainly by our National Taiwan University teams. And you know, those were the cream of the crop in Taiwan, that they managed to uphold standard and quality and earned quite a good reputation for ages. And then we also continue to expand to medical service to our diplomatic allies who are mostly in development setting. And like, for example, in Burkina Faso, one of the remaining medical mission over there actually started back in 1994, which is about 100 kilometers away from the capital. Not, as you know, in Sahara, you know, you don't have much around that area. And so when you have a small hospital, it will become the center of health service or large catchment area around it. You can imagine people come from hundreds of kilometers away just to seek experts in OB-GYN, which is big. It's a regular patronage for you, even if there's so many to choose from here in Maryland and DC. Over there, it's not. I have two obstetricians at home, my dad and my sister-in-law. And we know very dearly how this service can affect the quality of our ladies. I know many of UTI ladies. So. imagine even in southern Taiwan, half a century ago, there were only very few certified obstetricians around. And if you encounter difficult labor, they ship, they truck, they carry hours to see a good doctor. And the accessibility issue here, it become a big point. I was very happy to have Judy aside when I was in Malawi to assess the problem. As a clinical pediatrician in 2003 in Malawi, I was surprised and shocked actually to know that I was the only doctor in northern region. Pediatrician out of population of 1.2 million. Can you imagine every morning both of us will go around the pharmacy store to check whether you have enough drug there and see how I can prescribe the medicine, how I can manage the appointments that come in later. But thanks to her, it wasn't my headache pretty soon. And actually, Judy mentioned one big issue, not only managing the critical resources in the hospital and health system with drugs and supplies and consumables. It is the human capital that is one of the most important in development settings. So you see, even on her own effort, she trained, assisted, and gave by her own accord. Our colleagues, Malawian colleagues, to develop and learn and educate and seek opportunities to get trained. We try to link up with partners locally, with especially U.S. Government, the CDCs, USAIDs, and others to make sure things can go as comprehensive and holistic as possible. Especially in health, in the human capital within health system. I'd like to make a note on this issue because that is who we are.
Taiwan is the population of the people who know how to respond in time. We receive tremendous love from the international community. And we shouldn't be amused when this time we have opportunity to give back. And I think that quite strongly how it is, not a cold political rhetoric. Then, right now we have other disaster response and mobile teams also doing the job. That's okay. For various medical support and cooperation around the world. And to cite some examples, I participated. Some of these I didn't show before. On the left is the Malawian Vice President's plane fell down in December 2003. We actually organized a very quick response team that morning, 2 days after Christmas. And no mortality for the passengers. The only mortality was the passerby on the ground. And on top right was the time I went to Kenya to respond to a flood disaster. Can you imagine our medicine arrived faster than the local government? We sent an emergency pack of medical relief to that upper eastern region of Kenya and arrived within 5 days. That can supply 10,000 people for 2 months. And that, thanks to our arrangement in preparing to respond to emergency in our region as well as others in Italy. And allowed to. On the right, left, bottom was a patient I cared for 2 months because of the surgery done on him failed, poorly, and the wound could not heal. His tummy was open because of the simple hernia from the umbilicus. It's a very interesting situation where African kids suffer from this situation more often than the others. But the hospital really needs to train the staff to care for care, post-operatively, intra-operatively, to be clean, to be diligent, like the sterile technique, like wound dressing that's carefully done. But not done well, the whole tummy got infected, it drained, you know. On the picture you probably can't see much, but the smell is really with all the things come up. And we managed to treat the kid with very simple care. It's actually not that difficult if you understand the basics of the medicine. And he survived and got home in 6 months. And I think that's how we are when we consider Taiwan and the team doing the international global health. We can contribute not only from our expertise, which I'm very proud of. And as a representative from Ministry of Health and Welfare, I like to call myself the salesperson for Taiwan Health, bringing a suitcase and a big mouth to work everywhere. But the best part is, these are our teams around town, around Taiwan, government, different health sectors, public or private, and NGOs. There are too many to fit into this small slide. So, and also a lot of private sectors contribute, just to name name them is a tough job. But there are so many of them that I'd like to thank them from the bottom of my heart. And also like to share with you that such capacity to care and to help and to contribute should not be limited by politics at all. We should be and need to be part of the international health center. And this is one of the latest part. Our minister had the opportunity to receive tremendous support from U.S. government. Last year, the former secretary, Dr. Price, personally did mention in Geneva. And please do take a look of the video that our ministry showed that some other touchy stories of how we are capable of caring for people in need. And of course, this is the most rewarding part, earning smiles and happy faces from everywhere. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Director Liu. Sorry for also cutting you a little bit short there, your presentation. I know you could go for days, actually. Any other questions from the audience? Oh, yeah.
Hello, my name is Elodie Young, and I have a question for Judy. I wondered, how did you get the medicine for, like, a lower price? Would you cooperate with pharmaceutical company, or would you like ask them to get to provide free or lower prices medicine in order to help the people in Africa?
Okay, so I one is look for. I think the most basic approach is to ask for competitive quotations. So I think because we are a small like a hospital, so we did not do the so-called open tender. It's for large scale supply. But in terms of in the hospital, we ask for many quotes, more than three. Normally I'll ask for like six or seven, even beyond, because I wished I could get medicines as much as possible, and then would check or compare their price. And if there's a price that is like two companies, they're the same, then I will negotiate which one is really willing to reduce the price. And in Guinea-Bissau, the access of medicines, access to these medicines, it will become a little bit more difficult. So our approach, we could not get many quotes from within the country. So I finally found a supplier, I said IDA Foundation. And IDA Foundation is a non-profit organization that is supplying the medicines, selling the medicines with a very affordable price. And even the shipment is also much cheaper. They partner with the London airline. Which one? Which Air? Netherlands. KRM. Yes, they partner with the KRM for shipping the medicine that require the air shipment. And they also have like their partners. So, and starting in Guinea-Bissau, starting from all the medicines shipped from Taiwan for the long ship, time on the sea, and also this expensive cost in terms of shipment, we finally found that IDEA Foundation was one of our options to go for the majority of the supplies. But we still have this little other supplies that we have to to deal with the emergency needs. Yeah, so I think that I hope that I answer your questions about how to reach the port.
Sure.
I think you touch a very good a part of the international help, because procurement of medicine actually troubles development setting tremendously. The drug supply issue globally are divided into three parts. One is patent drugs. One is generics, another one is contraband and copycat and substandard ones. So in Africa, quite a big number, actually more than half of the countries over there do procurement of drug nationally. And private hospitals can only procure them in small batches. And even some private hospitals do procure from government procurement process, and so that they can be assured of quality and supply. And this is actually big business, because not only the amount that and quantity that to supply the for the health maintenance within such a big place and big population, you also consider the technical expertise needed to have the quality control and the stock control. So that's why I feel that Judy had already excelled in her area, because not only as a traditional pharmacist we know prescribing and blending of the drug, she went ahead and learned how these drugs be managed, stockpiled, and planned ahead. And that's what the global health, one of the most important part of the global health is to assure people at the end of the day get the drug inexpensively and with quality. And I think that issue can be seen clearly from the point that you're discussing. And of course, nowadays we have much more liberal trade policy towards the drug and the hospital supplies, and more careful assessment and quality standard upkeeping by both public administration and the international organization are needed. And of course, we need a lot of law enforcement at the border, like the gentleman here, and through the commerce and the custom, and to make sure that bad drugs, as the copycat drugs, would not make to the consumers. Thank you.
Any last questions before we wrap up this event? Oh, okay.
Hi, my name is Fang Yi. I come from Georgetown University Cancer Prevention Center. I have a question for Dr. Xu. You mentioned about you go to the some area. You needed to get a permission for the first day. You couldn't go to the severe area, right? And I wanted to know who take the leadership and who organized the other foreigner medical teams. And if you needed to coordinate with a Japanese team or Chinese team, how can you coordinate with them? Yeah. And I also have a question. Well, you met some medical team from UN or WHO, the national health centers, and how you communicate with them, yeah.
Before 2010 in Haiti earthquake, the WHO don't have the coordinator systems. So that's why they developed the WHO EMT system. And in 2008, we went there by the name of the Taiwan IHAR, and by the arrangement by the local friends. Because at that time, Myanmar government don't allow lots of the foreigners to the infected area. So we cooperate with the Buddhism Association. So before 2010, every country go to the field needs the local friends or some NGO to arrangement to the discussion with the government and permit you come there, you go there. But now the WHO want to set up a new system we call the EMT, and every country, every team know this rule, and we apply to the system, and then we are qualified. And when the disaster occurred, the government will call for help by maybe through the UN, and for the medical team by the WHO. Then the WHO will call all the qualified WHO EMT to the local. Yeah. But it's still very difficult because this is still a political issue. Someone they don't want you to apply, and someone they want to reject you. Yeah. So this is for the disaster. I think this even the national is still the political problem because everyone want to show up, but most of them they are not qualified, and this is unfair to the people in the field. But we want to offer them the qualified the medical service, like in my countries.
Well, thank you, everyone. We are well over time, so thank you for your patience and your participation, and please join me in thanking our speakers today. Yeah.